Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, May the 13th. From the USA Today yesterday, Congress and the White House this week head toward a collision over a five-year, $300 billion farm bill that the Bush administration says is stuffed with wasteful handouts to wealthy growers, but that supporters defend as a needed rural safety net that also expands nutrition aid for the poor. President Bush is promising to veto the measure, which is expected to be on the House floor later this week and then go to the Senate quickly thereafter. We will wonder this hour whether you think this farm bill is a good deal or not. Do you want Congress to pass the farm bill? Do you want President Bush to veto it? Is this good for Wisconsin farmers? How about taxpayers and consumers? We will talk this hour with the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, who is calling for Congress to pass the deal, which was announced late last week by the U.S. House Senate Farm Bill Conference Committee. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you have questions. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Sue Beitlich. She is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Joy.
So you want this bill to pass?
Absolutely. It's time we get this done.
Yeah, what's good about
it? It expired last September, and here we are in May, and we still don't have our farm and food program.
Yeah. Well, what's good about this bill?
Well, there's a lot of things that are really good about it. For consumers, 73% of the spending is going toward nutrition programs, so food stamps, women, infants, and children, school feeding programs. It increases that, and it increases the opportunity for them to have more fruits and vegetables in their feeding programs and for them to buy from local sources, local farmers, which those are really good things. This is a really comprehensive bill. They don't really even call it the Farm Bill anymore. The title of this is the Food Conservation and Energy Act of 2008. So for farmers, about 16% of the spending is going to go to farm programs that are safety nets that are intended to only kick in when prices collapse, when there are acts of Mother Nature beyond their control and they have crop or livestock losses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there is a lot of there's spending as well, as you say, for conservation and for renewable energy.
Absolutely. Conservation is a big part of this, which, you know, we support. There's an energy title in this bill, as there has been in the past farm bills. And we also have an energy bill, of course, in Congress. Mm-hmm. So that's good for, you know, biofuels, renewable energy, other forms of the bioeconomy that we want to support. And also, there is just really things for rural development. One big thing that Farmers Union has long advocated and pushed for is country of origin labeling. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know where our meats are coming from, and we don't know in the store unless they voluntarily label it. So that is included. We think that's a huge success. And another thing, if we have animals slaughtered in a state-inspected locker plant, at this point, we're not able to ship that across state lines. This includes a provision to allow that archaic law to change. It's kind of crazy when you think about it. We bring in all this meat from other countries. It's not labeled. We don't know where it's coming from. And yet, meat that is grown here, we couldn't even ship across state lines. So there's a lot of things that are getting straightened out that are really good in this bill.
Well, the thing that critics say is not so good about this bill is that, well, it's actually Bush administration says this is stuffed with wasteful handouts to wealthy growers. The agriculture secretary is saying when people can't afford to meet their grocery budgets, why should their tax dollars be going to people who have record net farm income? You want to respond to that?
Sure. Well, the thing is, when there is record farm income, we wouldn't be getting anything unless there is a loss. And it only kicks in when prices are extremely low. But with the high commodity prices now, there are some things called loan rates, targeting prices. That's increased slightly, but it's still, if with our high record input costs, the price of fertilizer has tripled this past year, fuel costs are up, the cost to grow this food has really gone up. You know, that's not even considered. And food costs in the U.S. are still only 9% of our family's income. So put all that in perspective. This is meant to be a safety net for farmers. I don't view it as pork. You know, we don't have farmers, we don't have food. We don't want to be reliant on other countries for all of our food. We don't want to be in that situation. So, you know, we've had farm bill programs, you know, since the late 30s when we knew we needed to have some. The farmers don't set their price. You know, we're not the price makers. We take the price from the marketplace. So it's really complicated, and it helps keep the price of food low for the consumer. And then we have the nutrition programs that help feed mm-hmm. the very hungry and the needy people.
We need to check our weather forecast, and then we do have open lines for your questions, your opinions about the Farm Bill. Talking with Sue Beitlich, who is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union during this hour. The Wisconsin Farmers Union is asking for statewide support in calling upon Congress to pass the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill, the $300 billion Farm Bill, will likely be voted on in the House later this week and then go to the Senate after that. President Bush is promising to veto the measure. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, May the 13th. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 o'clock. As gas prices climb and driving becomes more expensive, what about efforts to improve high-speed rail in Wisconsin and the Midwest? That will be the topic after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about the Farm Bill with the president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, who wants to see this bill pass in Congress. We wonder if you do too, or if you have any questions for her. Sue Beitlich, I mentioned that the Bush administration is promising a veto of this farm bill, but it looks like Congress might be able to override that veto?
That's right. If we can get 300 votes in the House, that's veto-proof. And so that's what we're striving to do. And it's just really important that people call their member of Congress and let them know that they support this food and farm and energy bill.
Yeah. And so far, does the Wisconsin delegation like this deal as far as you know?
It's pretty mixed. Mm-hmm. And some just aren't ready to commit. I didn't call yesterday. I talked to several late last week. And over the weekend, more of the details came out. You know, it takes time to actually look at, there's several titles to a farm bill. It's mm-hmm. very, very complex. So they wanted to see everything before they said yes or no. But I think it may become somewhat a partisan line as well.
To the phones we go, and Pete in Fond du Lac is a farmer, and he joins us by phone. Hi.
Hi. I always hate it when talk about the farm bill comes out in the newspapers and on the news, because I farm, and people think that I just go to the mailbox and get a check for $10,000 every year. Now, I'm a dairy farmer, and it's kind of a typical family farm. We had 250 acres last year, some of it's cropland, some of it's pasture. We have 40 dairy cows, 12 calves, 15 heifers, whatever. Our main crops are alfalfa, grassland pasture, oats, a little bit of corn. Last year, I qualified for a whopping $571. Mm. See, people don't realize that. They think I just kind of trot out there and get $10,000, and the guy down the road gets $8, and the big guy up the road gets $50. You can farm and not get a cent. And actually, no one's more ambivalent about farm programs than farmers and ranchers. Some people think they shouldn't be in it at all. Some people think they should be in it a lot more. Even these farm organizations kind of butt heads sometimes. I think the Farm Bureau was considered more Republican, and Farmers Union is considered more Democrat. And it's confusing. And you look at how big the United States is. Just think of the diversity in land and climate and even cultures of the people from Maine to the coast of California. So it's quite the deal, isn't it?
Yeah, well, do you like this? Do you want Congress to pass this this version of the bill, Pete?
I don't know much about it. I know that they're going to keep, they'd like to keep up that what they call the MILC program. And when milk is a much better price now than it did, let's say, a year and a half ago. When that milk program kicks in, and I have to qualify for that, I know I'm in trouble because it helps. It helps pay the light bill, but you're really scratching when that program kicks in.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're not exactly raking it in with, I guess, whatever, subsidies. Is that what you're talking about when you get your $500
right. Well,
check?
I think it's kind of geared towards big grain farms and cotton farms and things like that is where some of it, I don't know. But anyway, what I'm saying is, it always made my dad angry. He said, you know, if you take care of your farm, keep your erosion down, and grow grass and alfalfa for your livestock, you really don't qualify for much.
Yeah.
That was just always his comment, and I found out that that's true, too.
Yeah. Sue?
No, Pete's absolutely right. Pete, in this program, though, in MILC, it did get restored back to the original level, and they are actually going to be figuring in a cost of production into it. So that will be a little improved safety net for dairy farmers. And increasing the cap, about 250 cows now would qualify. And so he's absolutely right. This isn't meant to be a handout. These programs are meant to be a helping hand when there are losses beyond a farmer's control. And we are very independent as farmers, and we all are unique. And when you create a farm bill that does, I mean, Pete articulated this so well, from all across the U.S., there's compromises, there's concessions. There's not like a one-size-fits-all that is really perfect for everyone. And lots of farmers don't want to participate. That's their choice. But it's their, the part that Farmers Union's happy about with this, there's a permanent disaster assistance provision. And, you know, every year, Pete, I'm sure you know, if we have a drought or extreme flooding, whatever, we need to go to Congress every year and ask for some assistance to help us get through to the next growing season if we were affected. So that's included in here, so we don't need to go back every year. And it has to be a loss on the entire farm. There's a lot of loopholes that have been closed in this particular bill. I keep reading about it every minute now leading up to this interview because there is a lot to learn about it. And often we don't know exactly how it will affect us and how this is going to shake out. But I think for the administration to say that they want to veto this because it's not enough reform, there is a lot of reform. And there have been things, you know, I know people have said that there are rich, greedy farmers or people sitting in Manhattan getting these payments. And here you have Pete, a hardworking dairy farmer with, you know, 40 cows, just doing the best he can to make a living. Well, you know, if USDA and Congress really wanted to go after those people that are abusing the system, they could have, and they chose not to. But there are some things in here that will provide more transparency. They've reduced the adjusted gross income, so, really very few farmers would even be affected by this. So I think there's a lot of good things in this bill overall that will help people. Pete, you said that you have grass pasture. There's some grazing provisions, increased funding for that. So there's a lot of really good things for Wisconsin farmers in this bill.
I'd bring Pete back on, but I know that he's actually in the dairy barn.
He's probably milking right now.
He's milking.
Yeah. I bet you he's listening.
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
really appreciate his call.
In fact, we've had a couple of calls that couldn't stay on the line because they're busy milking.
They're milking, so, when those cows are done, you've got to be ready.
The Carrie from Thorpe was one of the callers who had to go milk the cows, but wanted to say that he hopes that President Bush vetoes the farm bill because the bill supports trends of larger profit-driven farms. Is that true?
Well, I don't believe that to be, the case, but, you know, a commodity program are, you know, they're designed for corn, soybeans, cotton, the grains that are storable, and they can do this. But milk and dairy products are part of this. Often in the past, vegetable growers and smaller farmers have not been happy, but there's a lot of new provisions in here for local farmers' markets to buy from local farmers. And I think there's a lot of misinformation about some of this. Again, it's not going to be a perfect bill, but I think overall it does help just the ordinary common farmer that if they really reach out and look, there's going to be some safety nets there for their type of operation.
Yeah. Your news release on this this deal that was announced last week does say that the Wisconsin Farmers Union was disappointed that direct subsidy payments were not eliminated from the bill.
That's right. And what this is, it's direct subsidy payments are where farmers, these are carryover programs from the past farm bills, like in the late 80s and the 90s, where farmers were paid just because they, you know, had land and had grown a crop at one time, not based on production or loss. And we feel that's wrong. I mean, that really gives a black eye to these programs. And we believe they should all be counter-cyclical programs. So they only kick in when market prices are low.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not totally get taken out. There were reductions over the years, but the last year of the Farm Bill, it goes back to the regular levels. So we have a baseline to calculate the next Farm Bill. Mm-hmm. And we don't agree with that, but if we're going to get votes, this is how it works. There's compromises in any piece of legislation that goes through. But overall, the payment limitation was reduced, which is good. But that is a concern to us.
Yeah.
We really felt that money could go to conservation, to commodity programs, you know, to nutrition programs. So that was a disappointment.
Let me take another caller, Annette in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding subsidies and the relationship of the subsidies that are paid in the United States compared to Europe, for example. And I understand that in the United States, the subsidies are based on quantity. So however much is produced, that's a subsidy. Whereas in Europe, for example, a subsidy is based on the quality of the product, not so much the quantity. And the reason I ask about that is because I understand, and maybe it isn't an issue right now with ethanol and all that, but initially with NAFTA and all that, there was so much corn production in the United States, and it all was sold to Mexico, and then the farmers in Mexico couldn't grow their own corn anymore because it was so cheap and dumped from America that, you know, that caused a lot of the problem of illegal immigration because they couldn't really produce their own corn anymore. Does the Farm Bill address any of that quantity versus quality and the fact that these huge, you know, Archer, Daniel, Midland, and those folks are just getting paid a lot of money to dump product on the market?
Yeah. Sue, can I ask you to hold your response until after our news, because I don't think we have enough time for that.
Sure.
We will continue talking with Sue Beitlich, who is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, about the Farm Bill that is expected to go before the House of Representatives this week and the Senate after that. It's a $300 billion Farm Bill. The Bush administration, or President Bush, is promising to veto the measure, but Congress could have enough votes to override the veto. We welcome your thoughts and questions about it at 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 736 on this Tuesday, May the 13th. We're talking with Sue Beitlich, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, about the Farm Bill, which is going to be going before Congress later this week, the House first, then the Senate, wondering what's in this bill and why the Farmers Union says it is a good deal for farmers, Wisconsin farmers, and for Wisconsin residents in general, pointing out that more than 73% of the spending is going toward nutrition programs and additional spending going toward conservation programs, renewable energy, and rural development. It is not just a farm bill, according to Sue. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. The Farmers Union wants statewide support in calling upon Congress to pass this bill. We wonder if you agree, what questions you have, and your views on this subject. We heard from a caller just before news time, Annette in Green Bay, who was wondering if the subsidies in America are based on quantity versus quality. She was under the impression that Europe did it the other way around, Sue, and also whether that was connected to American farmers growing so much corn that it was dumped on Mexico, and that added to the problem of illegal immigration.
Well, I appreciate Annette's call, but in the European Union, they have three times the number of farmers than we do in the U.S. Smaller farmers, but they are highly subsidized, and really, it's not based on quantity or quality, but they have what's called a decoupled payment, and they feel that that does not distort trade, because trade is also factored into all this, the trade agreements, WTO and Doha rounds. So they have a much, much higher subsidy, and they're supposed to be weaning and cutting back on that as well, but clearly it's not happening. One thing that's really happened, though, over time, we have a really weak dollar now, so we're exporting a lot more corn. There's been a lot of weather disasters where there's been crop failures around the world, and there's a lot more competition for food because of the higher demand. You know, more people are wanting more protein in their diets, and so there's just been a lot of competition for food. It also causes a lot of competition for the inputs, for fuel, for fertilizer, and 80% of our fertilizer that we use is coming from the Mideast countries, from unstable nations. A lot of competition for that. Cost of just transporting fertilizer across the ocean, you know, all of this is going up tremendously. But last year, to talk about the corn and what Annette is talking about in Mexico, we exported more corn last year than we have in a long, long time. 50% of the corn that we raise is animal feed. 9% goes to humans to eat. We export 17% of it. 22% in 2007 went to ethanol. And when you produce ethanol, you still get a distiller's grain that can be fed to cattle. And yet we still had a 10% surplus that we carried over into our food reserves. So really, I don't think that argument that we're dumping on Mexico and hurting them, I think that has happened in the past. You know, we want to have fair trade, you know, with these other countries, but I don't think it's just as can be sifted down to just that explanation. And so the European Union, in fact, I'm going to Warsaw for the World Farmer Congress in June, and we meet with farmers from all over the world, and I know that this is upsetting to them that we have this weak dollar, because that people are buying our product and not from the European Union, because ours costs less.
Thanks to Annette for the call. Next, we go to Ted in Lansing, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Does this farm bill have any money in it for set-aside acres, CRP, stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. It has increased money for conservation. Do you qualify for the Conservation Security Program right now, CSP?
No, I'm just totally against every bit of it.
Why?
Because all it does is open the doors for corporations, doctors, lawyers to go out and buy farmland and have a third of it paid for through our tax dollars.
And that was one thing that we were concerned about. People that really want the conservation programs didn't want a payment limitation on conservation payments. And we felt if commodity payments needed to have a cap and a limit, which we believe it should, so should that. And it does. There are lower payment limitations on it. And you're right. But we do need to have a balance of conservation programs, because we don't want everything, you know, plowed up and, you know, put into row crops where it's fragile lands. You know, we need to protect these wetlands and conservation. So this does include money for conservation, as we've had in the past, and actually a little bit of increased funding.
Yeah. Explain that a little bit more, though, Sue, because I think a lot of people hear the government pays farmers not to grow food, and then we're mad because food prices are going up at the supermarket.
Well, you know, we want to have wildlife habitat, to have green spaces. You know, we don't want to be farming land that shouldn't really be farmed. You know, we want trees and we want grasses. We're storing mm-hmm. carbon in our soil for global warming. We want all of these things. Years ago, there was something called the set-aside program where you got paid to keep it idle. These are programs like conservation reserve programs. There's EQIP programs. There's a lot of acronyms and jargon out mm-hmm. there to do that. But you're going to have people on with both viewpoints on this. But, you know, farmers really want their soil, so they really do practice good conservation mm-hmm. methods. They don't want the erosion and the runoff and to overuse. They can't afford to overuse chemicals and fertilizers with the price of them. So there is a balance.
Jack in Luana, Iowa. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I would like to point out that without the farm programs and without the subsidies as kind of a bribe or a carrot, that conservation would suffer immensely, just immensely. And, you know, and the farm bill is overdue, you know, albeit whatever the details are, it's way overdue. But I'd like to point out that I'd like to especially address it like Ted, without farm programs and subsidies, it would just be an environmental disaster, you know. And it was real nice what you just said about how farmers really care and stuff. But if they don't have the bribe of the payments, they'd turn them loose and the countryside would look like the Dust Bowl inside of 2 years. So that's mm-hmm. my comment.
I think he's right about that. Yeah. I'm really glad you have callers from Iowa.
Yeah, I was going to say we have a trend here, but we also have some callers from Wisconsin, too, uh-huh. including Mike in Oshkosh. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, good morning. Did I reach Iowa Public Radio?
Hey.
Okay. To the extent that the Farm Bill keeps farmers and agriculture connected by umbilical cord to the federal government, I would be against it, and I'll tell you why. We're within 12 to 20 years, probably closer about 15, where the entire federal budget will be in four programs. That is interest on the debt, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. At some point in that time, farmers and all other programs in government are going to have to find a way to cut that umbilical cord from the federal government, because there will not be subsidies. There will not be a Department of Agriculture. So maybe right now, for whatever period of time this agricultural bill is in force, what, 3-5 years, maybe it will work. But at some point, farmers need to cut the umbilical cord, because there won't be any cash to subsidize anything.
Now, do you agree with that, Sue?
Well, I think this really does reduce things. You know, the subsidy, as people like to use it, it's really a safety net. And when we talk about this, Mike, it's only to kick in when prices are extremely low. And I think the very first caller, Pete, talked about this. He hardly gets anything, $570 or whatever, because the prices were high this last year. And so, and really, the baseline, the dollar amounts that they've established as, you know, the target price, the very low price, farmers would be out of business. It's really not that important. But what's important is this disaster assistance. And, you know, what happens if we don't have food in this country and we do become reliant on others and there's embargoes? I mean, that is really serious. And, you know, I disagree to a certain degree. I believe we need some type of a farm and food program for this nation. I mean, that is where our strength is. We haven't gone hungry for several decades, and we don't know what that's like. And, you know, I think that's why we need to keep these programs in place.
Our guest is Sue Beitlich. She is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, talking with us about the Farm Bill that's before Congress, a 5-year, $300 billion Farm Bill that President Bush is threatening to veto, but there could be enough votes in Congress to override that veto. It's expected to be on the House floor later this week and then go to the Senate quickly after that. Our guest saying that it's about time to pass this farm bill. What do you say? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, I'll talk with the author of the new book, Semantic Antics, How and Why Words Change Meaning. That's coming up after 8. To more phone calls now for Sue Beitlich, who is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, in support of the Wisconsin Farmers Union of the Farm Bill currently before Congress. George in Rubicon is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
I'm a third-generation farmer in Wisconsin here, and we've seen different farm bills and different variations. I'm glad that, Joy, that you have somebody on who can speak from the farmer's standpoint. Mm-hmm. A general comment is that a lot of people don't realize, Sue, how many different titles there are to the farm bill, and that the commodities is just one portion, and it's share has been shrinking and shrinking, which is perhaps not a bad thing, and it's a good system, and the safety net idea is very, very important because it saved our behinds more than once. I have a specific question, though, for you, Sue, because I know the Farmers Union is very strong supporter of country of origin labeling, and that is part of the Farm Bill, and that also ties into animal identification, which is somewhat controversial. Could you make a few comments about that, please?
Sure. Yes, COOL is a really big part of this, you know, where our meats, fruits, and vegetables, everything is labeled from the country that it was, you know, bred and born and raised and slaughtered in. We feel consumers need to know that and make their choice of purchases. Animal ID is another thing that can tend to be controversial. We have premise ID right now in Wisconsin, you know, farmers are participating in it, but some, you know, have some issues with it. They don't think the government needs to know everything about them, where these animals are, or it's a lot of headache. But then if there is a disease outbreak or whatever, we need to have some system in place. But it is linked, and we just really feel that that needs to be confidential, that there shouldn't be a liability placed on the farmer if there's an E. coli outbreak or something because of a slaughterhouse issue. And then the cost of this, is it because of you know, food safety or terrorism or whatever it might be, you know, we don't think that the farmer should bear the entire cost of this animal identification. So there's a lot of issues to work out, you know, cost, confidentiality, liability. And I really appreciate your call, George. And I wanted to just mention, if we put this whole farm bill spending into perspective, it's one half of 1% of all federal spending. And every time that there's budget cuts and the first department they go to is the Department of Agriculture. We're always asked to take less. And actually, in this last farm bill, we spent $23 billion less than was allowed to the program, which affects baseline spending. And I think that's a reform that needs to happen, you know, this whole baseline spending issue.
Yeah. We have an email from a listener who was questioning the disaster relief portion. This is a disaster assistance program, which you're happy is there because you've been pushing for this. It helps farmers experiencing unpredictable weather conditions. This email from Kent says, isn't that what insurance is for? Do we really want our government in the insurance business?
Well, actually, it does require farmers to have more crop insurance. So, you know, there is a provision for that, and that is part of this. You know, if farmers don't have crop insurance, they can't get a disaster assistance payment. Our crop insurance program within the government does need reform. There are some problems with it, and I think this bill is trying to address that. I haven't read all the details yet, Kent, on that crop insurance reform, but you're right. This isn't just a handout. It's just a supplement to that because you never know when you can have 12 inches of rain in a day and lose everything. And there needs to be something there to help that farmer through.
Next, we go to Brett in Madison. Hi, Brett. You're on the air.
Thanks. Joy, great show. One of the things I wanted to talk about is biomass and low-carbon biofuels. We have enough biomass in Wisconsin to replace half of our current coal usage. And I know Sue's worked on this. Aren't there provisions in there to promote more biomass to help gather switchgrass and stuff like that?
Absolutely. There's an energy title in the Farm Bill that does promote biomass crop production, not just from corn, but from other sources. There's loan guarantees for biomass. There's conversions that will help assist to convert to biomass energy. There's grant programs for that. There's biodiesel fuel education initiative and grant programs. So there's a lot of provisions within the energy title of the Farm Bill that will help us move into more biofuels and bioenergy production.
We have some open lines now if you want to get in. Still 5 minutes or more to go. So if you have a question about the Farm Bill that Congress will be taking up soon, we welcome your questions. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And Madison 263-1890. Or we welcome your opinion as to whether you want to see Congress pass this Farm Bill that the Bush administration is promising to veto. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. Our guest is Sue Beitlick, who is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, in support of the Farm Bill and calling on statewide support for Congress to pass it. Helene in Lake Delton is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there, Joy. Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to give a little perspective as to what the Conservation Reserve Program means to me. I'm over 70. I came off from a farm that's been in our family for well over now 100 years. This is a little different farm than this other farm I'm speaking of, is where I raised my children. And the Conservation Reserve Program has enabled me to pay the taxes and hold on to this land to be able to pass it on to my children, who do appreciate it. And there is nothing like owning land. It's been the Conservation Reserve Program, a portion of it, for 20 years. It'll come out this end of September this year. It's enabled me to hold on to it, share the land, the rest of it, for hunting and just general enjoyment of woodland and nature to family and friends. I've opened up the land for 15 years, not the conservation reserve, the rest of it, to disabled hunters through the DNR program that enables disabled hunters to be able to hunt.
Well, good for you, Helene. And
I think that's wonderful, too, Helene. That is so good about conservation programs. And in this provision, there's a farmland protection program as well. That funding will double because we really need to protect our farmland to have it either working or, like Helene is doing, probably more fragile land that she's able to hold on to pass on from generation to generation. There's a grassland reserve program that can enroll 1.25 million acres of fragile grazing land to prevent it from conversion to cropland and protect it from development. So all of this is really, it goes hand in glove. It's very, very important. So
yeah. Let me
really respect what you're doing, Helene.
Thanks for the call, Helene. Jim in River Falls, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just had a question. I was wondering if this current Farm Bill, do they have provisions in there to buy up development rights from farmers? I know previously it was a different bill in Congress, not the Farm Bill, but they had it. If you gave up the right to develop your farm, you could write it off. I think for people that were engaged in farming, it was 100% of the value, you know, above what you would get if it was sold for farmland.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit, Jim. Can you address that, Sue?
Well, I'm not certain about the details of a purchase of development rights, but as I said just a moment ago, there is increased funding for farmland protection programs, which I think is a similar to what Jim is referring to. So I can certainly, you know, find out more details as all of this unfolds, but I think it's a really good question.
Marie in Milwaukee emails, nothing in the Farm Bill would address sustainable and organic growers and growing processes, which would be the best approach to conserving resources and energy. I don't want cheaper prices. I want food that doesn't contain pesticides, hormones, or other toxic byproducts.
It does. Yeah. I mean, it does strengthen the organic ag research. There's more money for that. There's money to convert to to go from conventional farming to organic farming. There's transitioning dollars for that. There's money to support farmers markets and locally grown. And most of those farmers aren't using chemicals. They might not all be certified organic. They don't want to go through those costs of it. But generally, you can put a face to that food and you know where it's coming from. And there's a really nice beginning farmer program in here because we need beginning farmers, and so there's programs for education and training on a variety of things for beginning farmers. So there's a lot of money for organic, for locally grown foods. So that's included in there, Marie. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. And in less than 30 seconds, you're hopeful that Congress will pass this and override a veto if it happens?
We hope so. And you know, Wisconsin is very key in this. We have several members in the House that are on the fence on this issue. So we need your listeners to call in and encourage them to vote this week in support of this food and farm and energy bill and conservation. It's so important.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us. We really appreciate it, Joy.
Sue Beitlich is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing the hour and to Michelle Kofel for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.